If you've been told to pull up your socks, then make sure it's a pair of TNT socks. The TNT shop is now open at TNTradio.live. Deprogram with Michael Parker on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
All right, truth seekers, are you ready for hour two? Because it is happening now. And we're going to start off with, you know, it's easy to think that nothing's ever going to get fixed and it's just going to get worse and worse. But there are people who are on our side. There are people who think what we think, and they're trying to make a difference. I just read today that U.S. Senator Ron Johnson of Wisconsin is going to have a roundtable discussion, I think tomorrow. It's called COVID-19 Vaccines, What They Are, How They Work, Possible Causes of Injuries. And they are going to, they've invited all these folks, you know, from the CDC, from Pfizer, from Moderna, all this. Of course, none of them will show, I don't imagine. But anyway, there are people who are trying to have these conversations and speak with medical experts and get doctors who specialize in COVID-19 and the vaccine research to join Senator Johnson at this roundtable and get further information out. He's doing that. Meanwhile, outgoing Representative Louie Gohmert of Texas is urging the Health and Human Services to establish a vaccine injury table, as is required by law. That's right, by law. Representative Gohmert said, this is his quote, "It is asinine that despite the fact that our government and pharmaceutical companies fast-tracked the production of an experimental vaccine and forced millions of Americans to take it or risk losing their jobs or freedom, that a vaccine injury table disclosing known side effects of the vaccine as required by law has yet to be developed for the COVID-19 shot." And he didn't just come out saying this recently, just, you know, out of thin air. He and four other members of Congress sent a letter to HHS Secretary Xavier Becerra and the Health Resources and Services Administration Administrator Carol Johnson back in the middle of November, saying that no COVID-19 countermeasures injury table has been established to date, and it's an absolute failure on the part of the HRSE. "It's deeply concerning to many members of Congress and to the American citizens that they represent." Well, yeah, that's exactly right. So they were supposed to create this vaccine table of these types of injuries that could result from the vaccines, but they've not done so. And he's calling them out on it. Meanwhile, a civil rights and vaccine injury attorney, Aaron Seary, has said, you know what? Unfortunately, the HHS has a long history of doing this exact thing. They will delay this as long as they possibly can, because adding injuries to a table then kind of calls it to light. It makes it harder to defend against such claims. And when that happens, that means that even more claims will come out. They're going to be filed, and then the HHS has to settle them. And they don't want to do that. So he went on to say that the HHS has a policy of promoting vaccinations, and anything that casts doubt on the safety of the shots cuts against the policy, including adding injuries to any vaccine injury table they administer. So yeah, I mean, that pretty much calls it out. These guys are loathe to deal with this. They don't want to deal with this. And all of this is kind of a result of the National Childhood Vaccination Injury Act that was established in 1986, because the federal government decided, you know what, we're going to give these manufacturers of these vaccines immunity from injuries caused. We don't want them to have to pay any money in lawsuits anymore. They're having to pay too much, and, you know, that's just too hard on them. So we're going to create this Vaccine Injury Act where you now have to take up your case with the federal government and the secretary of the HHS through the United States Federal Court of Claims, which seems completely wrong, but that's the way it is. So yeah, the HHS, they don't want an expanded table of injuries, because they know that there are a lot, and now they will be on the hook for this. Meanwhile, Moderna, Pfizer, the rest of these guys are off of the proverbial hook. It is so insane and upside down. It just, it makes one very, very angry. But thankfully, there are people like Representative Louie Gohmert, Ron Johnson, that are, you know, taking up the mantle and having the courage to speak out for the rest of us and for those who've already been injured or died as a result of these hurried treatments. Well, these vaccines, they're not even vaccines, but you know what I'm saying. Guys, did you know there are many ways that you could listen to TNT Radio? Why not stream us direct from our website on your desktop, tablet, a mobile device, or download our app from the App Store? We even stream live on YouTube, Rumble, and Odyssey. We've got you covered on TNT Radio.
The stories affecting you.
They cover the important stories.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Diversity is a topic that is long discussed. Benchmarks are created for businesses to hit certain percentages of new hires based on skin color and ethnic backgrounds. And here to discuss how this may affect those businesses' careers and quality of service is TNT News producer John Madlin.
Now I'm back. Artificial diversity for the sake of mathematical equations can be the death of high-quality work. We recently have heard the tales of hiring managers that they have benchmarks to hit, and if they don't hit them, they fear for their job. Sometimes they will hire people just on the fact that they're a woman or the color of their skin, even if the other candidate for the position was more qualified. But don't worry. Somehow, this makes sense to you. You should probably shut your mouth and go along with it, or else you're hateful and you are a problem. Well, now, Michael, top law schools are removing LSAT requirements. The American Bar Association, the accrediting body for law schools, will no longer require it for school admissions in 2025. The test helped decide who was the elite of the elite when the schools decided who would be attending their school come the fall, but will no longer be the way to go. So LSAT grades have been used in admission since 1947. Law schools, as of now, at least require scores from two different tests or just one of them, graduate record examinations or the graduate management admissions test. The belief is this will create a more inclusive population within the schools. This will stop white and moneyed people. I'm going to say it again. This will stop white and moneyed people over people of color that support, and that's the reason that they support the scrapping of the LSAT. To me, very racist statement, but I'm going to continue. So admissions of the law school claim minorities are less likely to afford LSAT test prep courses, materials, and fees, and that is a cultural bias that favors white people. And I guess when they came up with this equation, they didn't talk to people like Marshall Mathers while he was growing up in 8 Mile in a trailer park. It was just assumed white people are swimming around in cash like Scrooge McDuck. But I assure you, as a white dude, I do not have a vault of cash and coin that I use as a swimming pool. It's not just lawyers, though. New York City, the city council here, passed legislation to improve equity and diversity and inclusion as well. They will break down the FDNY by gender and race and work on making it less white and less male. By the look of things, half of the FDNY should be women, but will the tests be changed to facilitate that desire? Circling back to the LSATs being about money, well, hold it 1 minute. Gavin Newsom has plans for reparations to the tune of about $223,000 per person for hosting for housing discrimination that has occurred in the past. The final amount will be recommended in the month of June next year, 2023. The state of the USA right now is racism. All issues are viewed by skin color, narratives are weaved from it, and definitions of racism are changed to support it. So, Michael, what are your thoughts?
Well, it's funny because I just got through speaking with a person from South Africa where they have deep race issues. And he was saying that in his opinion, you know, the U.S. is heading for the same type of polarization and social unrest that his country has. And I tend to agree with that. And I told him this is not by accident. This is a created situation, which is not to say that we haven't had racism in the past. And there are things that, you know, need to be addressed. But now we're at a point where this is being created and promulgated, I believe, to make us focus on our differences instead of our similarities and to break us down. And you know, when I was reading the articles earlier today, and I was reading about the fire department in New York, just on a practical matter, well, what if some women and blacks don't want to be firefighters? I mean,
you make a really good point, Michael. You make a really good point. It's there, even if there is a way, you can say we want to reach out within different communities to try to raise their attempt to apply. I think we do need to know for a basis of that hypothesis, we need to know how many minorities applied, how many women applied. And maybe they just don't want to. And when I say, right, that, are they going to change the test? I'm a very, very strong supporter of finding a way past this and unifying. And like you're saying,
yep,
what we're seeing is installation of separation by all, yes, means necessary.
Absolutely.
Since I've started protesting, doing activism, I can't tell you how diverse my group is. And anybody that is not white, all the time we make jokes about how the white man is the bad man because they know
right,
that it's not true. Like, it's like, that's the running joke. We're all very, if you want to use the word woke, right, to the reality of it. No, yeah, one's buying that BS that's awake. It's being used for political gain and separation where you can gain more power. So yeah, what happens if people aren't applying right now? How do you force somebody to apply? And you know what? Even further, when I was at City Council and I spoke in September, their whole stance about why there's not retention of workers in general and how the census is that they need to hire so many people across all city positions. And when it was brought up with vaccine mandates and, mm-hmm, all the people they've terminated in the name of that, they said maybe the retention is people like working from home, but we want them back in the office. And nothing to do with vaccine mandates and all the firings. And they said, maybe we need to make the lounges nicer. You spend a lot of your day in these places and they need nicer lounges. And this just shows the disconnect that the city of New York has. And they don't realize that people don't want to go to the city because they're going to get mugged, thrown in front of trains and beaten, yeah, just trying to get to work.
Yeah. And you know what, you were talking about this lowering of LSATs, and Kenny Zhu, who's been on my show before, has talked a lot about this type of discrimination where, you know, we're going to lower the bar and make it more, you know, even for everybody. Well, guess what's going to happen? If you lower the bar, then you're going to let in people who are not necessarily going to finish. And if they do finish, they may not be the caliber of an attorney or lawyer that you want. Imagine you're in a situation where you need to defend yourself, or you've got a divorce, or you've got a business deal that's gone wrong, or you're up for a crime or something. I don't care what the color of the sex of my defender is. I want the best that I can get. That is the last thing I'm concerned about, is their demographic.
Yeah, 100%, Michael. I mean, we have this conversation endlessly. When people, real people, are asked, the majority. Now, granted, there are racist people on both sides of this equation.
Yeah,
and that's life. Is going to be, that's life, and that's something you can never cure because some people are just hateful. Now, having said that, if you take everything away and you ask even a racist person, I have two options for you for a lawyer because your business is going under. This one's really good right here. I could give you my really good suggestion, or I could give you another lawyer. And everyone would say, oh, I want the really good lawyer, because, yeah, you want the best. I don't, yeah, think that I should ever get a job over anybody because I'm white. I would, agreed, think it's the most ridiculous thing in the world. If I want to get a job, I better get it on my own merits, and I better be good at the job. That's the other thing. You know, a lot of people in this cancel culture, I've worked with people in different professions, and I've watched as the years have gone by, as things got politicized, people would be treated differently. And what I mean by that is, if I do something and one of the managers wanted to have a talk with me about it, they would have a very in-depth discussion. And then when somebody would totally break the rules, they would be like, oh, you know, that guy he's really, really liberal, and he'll get upset if we talk to him. So, and I'm not, that's not even a joke. That's a real statement from back when I worked at the hospital. Mm-hmm. If they had like a policy decision to be made, they would talk to the people that were identifying as conservatives, and they were trying to get us to push that culture forward and fix things within our department. But the managers would not want to talk to the people that would throw temper tantrums, and they would actually say things like, that person's liberal. So, I mean, this is a very strange world we live in, and it's crippling the way jobs work.
Yes. And we're almost to the break, but I got to say something about Gavin Newsom and this reparations thing. I mean, oh my God. I mean, every bad idea, you know, they try to float it in California first. And Gavin Newsom, this guy, this empty suit, I mean, the other day he was saying, well, you know, now he's going to really take it to the oil companies because the oil companies are the problem. You know, completely ignoring the fact that his party, his president is the one who waged war on the energy business from day one. And so now he's going to, you know, pull out this reparations plan, which I'm sorry, I think is just rife for abuse. I mean, when COVID was happening and we gave away all this money to people that filed incorrectly or whatever. So, I mean, not only is it unfair and unrealistic, but it's just rife for potential abuse.
Yeah. And what about the reparations, Michael, for all the businesses that he drove under? Where are those?
Exactly. Yep.
Mind numbing.
John. Yeah. John Matlin, thank you for the stories and thank you for bringing these up, because as exhaustingly banal as or ridiculous as these things seem to be, they have to be spoken about. And a lot of people, they don't see the issues that we see with them. And that's our job, John, to keep pointing them out. Thank you for doing it.
You got it.
All right, John. Ladies and gentlemen, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to speak with Charlie Robinson. And I have been listening to his podcast and been learning some things. I'm looking forward to our discussion. We'll just stick around. We'll be back.
You should hear what Joe Hoft is talking about.
They wouldn't let him in, even though he had the permit to go and observe the roll-up process. They wouldn't let him do it. They called the cops on him. The cops showed up thinking there's going to be some sort of riot. There was no riot. Patrick was just sitting there in a chair. And as he sat there that evening, he saw people come in and drop off these envelopes full of these so-called flash drives. And the thing was, then at a certain point at night, around 10:30 or so, the media started mentioning the results of the election. And he's like, well, how can that be? Because all these envelopes full of these flash drives were all sitting not far from him in this hallway at the center there in Detroit. He's like, well, how are they getting these numbers if they're not uploading this data from these flash drives? So we learned yesterday, thanks to Patrick, in Michigan anyways, that the numbers being reported to the media are not supported by these flash drives coming out of the various precincts, because those flash drives weren't even counted. Another piece of the puzzle comes to the forefront.
Joe Hoft on today's News Talk, TNT Radio. A better business tip from TNT Radio. The benefits of advertising on today's News Talk, TNT Radio, should be clear to businesses of any shape or size. It can be accessed anywhere, anytime, by anybody, and is the perfect way to build brand awareness and stimulate digital activity. If you'd like more information about advertising on TNT Radio, simply fill out your details on our contact page and we'll be in touch. To find out more, go to tntradio.live. They spent a lot of time rubber stamping vaccine passports at the G20 summit in Bali. What do they have for us next? It's not an oversight that U.S. vax travel ban is still in place. Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
All righty, truth seekers, I think you're going to like this one. For the remainder of this hour, I'm joined by Charlie Robinson. He's the author of The Octopus of Global Control, which is a controversial and humorous book, which is just the flavor we like, that takes quotes from over 500 witnesses to some of history's greatest events. He is also the co-author of the best-selling book, The Controlled Demolition of the American Empire, that he wrote with Jeff Berwick. And he is also the host of Macro Aggressions Podcast, which I've been listening to, and the co-host of the Union of the Unwanted with Sam Tripoli. My guest, Charlie Robinson. Welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me, Michael. I'm excited to get weird with you. Let's do it.
Let's do it, brother. Hey, so I wanted to jump on one topic in particular, because I was listening today to your episode on these bioterror simulations. Like, of course, I was familiar with Event 201 and how sketchy and weird that all was. But then I start listening to your show and you know, and I read Whitney's work as well, which you mentioned in the show, but holy cow, then I go to like Google and stuff and start looking this up. There wasn't just Event 201, and you talk about this. So let's talk about these pandemic bioterror simulations. I didn't realize there were so many of them. There was the Dark Winter Exercise, Atlantic Storm, this clade X, which you discuss at length, and then
Spars.
Event 201. Yeah. So
yeah,
I yield the floor.
I'm all for practicing, right? Practice makes perfect and all that stuff. And if I thought that they were doing simulations in order to make sure that they were better at responding to events that happen, I would be all for that.
Yeah.
The problem is that when they run the simulation, then real life happens a couple years, or in the case of Event 201, just 6 months later, and it winds up unfolding almost identically to the way the simulation ran. And you can only see that, you know, once, maybe coincidence. Hey, you guys got it right. Or, you know, you're experts after all. But you do it over and over and over and over again, and I start to notice a pattern. Johns Hopkins Health Center is the common denominator in all of these.
Yep.
They're always involved in it, whether that's Dark Winter, which happened in 2001, whether that's Atlantic Storm, Crimson Contagion, Clade X was one that they ran a couple of years ago. It simulated an outbreak. Event 201, they ran in tail end of October 2019, simulating the outbreak of a novel coronavirus that starts in a market and spreads internationally and is only stopped with a vaccine. So they run these simulations. There's a couple. Not only is Johns Hopkins a common denominator, but there's also a couple other people. There's somebody named Tara O'Toole who gives me the creeps, and yep. she's involved in all of this. She was deeply involved with Dark Winter, the simulation that happened in 2001. In fact, she wrote it. And in the Dark Winter simulation, it simulated a smallpox attack. And in this fake simulation, the Iraqi, I think it was Saddam Hussein was behind this, started mailing anthrax to people, to politicians, and also to the media. In the fake simulation, Judith Miller at the New York Times received anthrax. Then a couple of months later, in real life, guess who got anthrax mailed to them? Judith Miller. When you know, it turned out it wasn't actually anthrax, because we cannot kill the people that are participating in this scam. Right. We have to keep them alive. But she received the fake anthrax. Of course, Tom Daschle was involved in that one as well. If you remember,
yes,
he's one of the few people that refused to sign on to the Patriot Act in 2001. And then anthrax got mailed to his office. You remember, you could see, like, they showed the serial killer handwriting where it said Tom Daschle was also. And then you flash forward a couple of, well, 15 years or so, or 16 years to 2017, and you have a Clade X presentation run by Tara O'Toole. Guess who it's featuring now? Tom Daschle. What do you know? Yeah. Now he's a participant in this. So they have a way of recycling these people. And Thomas Inglesby is another character that winds up showing up over and over again. Now, Tara O'Toole, after writing these events, Atlantic Storm in 2005 and Dark Winter in 2001, she's now on the board of directors of InQtel, which is the venture capital arm of the CIA. So she's deeply involved in government, nefarious government programs. She's, some might even say, she's psychic. You know, she seems to run these programs, and then they wind up happening almost identical to the way they wrote the simulation. So I, you know, again, once a coincidence, twice, maybe these guys are really good at it. 3, 4, 5, 6 times. I mean, it starts to paint a picture of advanced knowledge, which makes me very concerned. And if they know what's going to happen, then it makes me start to think, okay, well, what other simulations do they have coming up? Because if you know what they've got going next week, then you know what you might be in store for 2 years from now.
No question. And Charlie, it's like, I was probably very much like you. It's like the minute, I mean, I started reading about COVID at the very end of 2019, because I delve into conspiracy lore. So when I found out about Event 201, I was immediately suspicious, but it's only now, you know, what, 3 years later into this thing, that I find out all of these other things happen. And even as kind of jaded as I am on these types of things, where I almost always expect the worst, I'm still surprised and horrified to find new material that backs it all up.
Me too. You know, I want this to all be a huge misunderstanding.
Right.
I've never wanted to be wrong about something so much in my life than all of the stuff that we see with regards to the vaccines and this being made to happen. I don't want to report on this. I want to do podcasts on football. That's what I want to do. I don't want to do all this stuff. But I feel like the priority is here. I feel like that this is that if you have for whatever reason, you and I have the ability to see through a lot of the things that distract other people. So if we have this ability, I feel like it's a priority to ring the alarm bell, let people know what's going on. I'm not saying that I have necessarily any solutions to this, except that I think that when you recognize that they're doing this, it takes a little bit of power away from them. If you watch a magician perform and you know, watch that left hand, it's going in the back pocket, it's going to pull out the dove, because I've seen this trick before, then it has less power over you. And so I think that it's important for us to talk about these things, even if we don't have an actual solution for it. I think it's important for us to talk about this so that the next time there's a scenario, everyone starts going, uh-oh, keep your eye on this one. I told you this was going to happen. I saw the simulation. I saw that Johns Hopkins was running a simulation, simulating the outbreak of monkeypox or something. And then next thing you know, monkeypox is all over the news. And you go, what's going on here? They didn't run a simulation on monkeypox, just to be clear. But they would. They might.
But we're going to come back to that because our buddy Bill Gates, and I use buddy obviously very loosely, he did say in November of last year something about, you know, what if there were a smallpox outbreak? And we haven't had a smallpox outbreak, thank God. But we did have the monkeypox. You guys, I got to take a quick break. It's the bottom of the hour news break. I speak with Charlie Robinson. We are going to continue on the other side.
Great news.
The news.
We have news.
Great news.
Great news.
Great news.
Great news, my friends.
Yeah. Listen.
TNT Radio News.
This is James O'Neill with a check of today's headlines. India's foreign minister has signaled his country will continue to purchase oil from Russia, even as Western governments press Moscow with price caps on oil exports. The U.S. and European Union have agreed to intensify talks to resolve EU concerns over major subsidies for American companies contained in the U.S. clean energy bill. Jurors have begun deliberating in the Trump Organization's criminal tax fraud trial.
That badly wrapped gift under the tree might be a mystery.
What in the world is that?
But you always know what to expect from us.
It's news I can trust.
Merry Christmas to all.
Merry Christmas.
TNT.
Charlie Robinson is my guest this hour. He's the host of Macro Aggressions. We've been talking about one of his recent episodes, which has to do with all of these tabletop simulations that just somehow, by sheer chance, turn out to look very, very similar to what happens in real life. And Charlie, I appreciate what you said towards the end of that, because, you know, I think in my mind someday, one day I'll look at some of these people, my detractors, and say, I told you so. But I never end up doing that. I don't ever say, I told you so. I don't ever expect to get an apology. And sometimes I wish I didn't know what I know. But you're right. People like us, we have to do this. And, you know, sometimes it wears on you, but it needs to be done by somebody.
I feel something in my soul tells me to sound the alarm bells. If you're somebody that sees it and you can see what's coming, and I'm not trying to pretend like I have all the answers or anything like that, but I know who these people are. I know what they want. The underlying theme of all of this, whether it's the United Nations or the World Economic Forum, there's a theme, right? There's two themes, actually. The first is world government. We know that. Yeah. But the second thing that happens, it's a theme running through all of it, and it has to actually be put into place before, is depopulation. Yeah. They have to lower, you know, you think about this, you're going to take over, you want to create a one world government, right? You know, and they're open about this. I know it sounds like we have our tinfoil hats on, but you only have to read their writing. They write about how this is what they want. So if you're going to do that from a logistical standpoint, the fewer people you have to control, the easier it is for you to do that. So you want to thin the herd. They talk openly about this in all of their sort of ancillary groups, like the Club of Rome. You know, they talk about the Committee of 300. They talk about how we've got to get, you know, if we do a good, like our buddy Bill Gates, if we do a really good job with our vaccination program, we can lower that number, meaning overall population, by about 10 or 15%. They want fewer people. Once you come to that, once you know that, you know who these people are and you know what they want. They want a world government and they want fewer people so that it's easier for them to form this world government. Then work backwards from that. You go, okay, well, how would I go about doing that? How would I go about this massive depopulation? Well, one way I could do that would be to scare everybody to death and then convince them that the only solution, the final solution, is this injection that we're going to rush to market and just say, and everybody's going to get on board and say it's the greatest thing ever. So I'm not saying that is absolutely the plan, but if you were trying to depopulate and you were trying to create a one world government and thin the herd out, that's one way you would do it. And so when you, and maybe it makes me, you know, a little cynical, but I look at these projects that they have going. I look at things like the World Economic Forum's, Build Back Better plan, Fourth Industrial Revolution. And I go, okay, well, what are they really trying to do? They're trying to get everybody to be a little bit, first of all, they'd love to get rid of as many humans as they can, but yes. In the event that they can't, then they would at least like to make you a little bit less human. Maybe physically less human and definitely legally less human. You know, the way like a genetically modified tomato, you can't patent a regular tomato. It's from nature. It's just the way it is. But you make one deviation, one slight change to that tomato. Now it's not a natural tomato. Now it's a genetically modified tomato. And when you have a genetically modified tomato, you can do a bunch of things with it. You can own it. You can own the patents. You can own the seeds. You can sell it. You can do all that stuff. You can own it like you own the licensing on something. And I look at this. I look at the World Economic Forum and these maniacs running it, talking about transhumanism and all this stuff. And I think, boy, you know, if there is a way to make a human one deviation less human, then you could just think of what they do with genetically modified tomatoes. You could own it, patent it, throw it away, put it in a trash can, put it in jail for the rest of its life. You know what I mean? Like anything is possible. Trade it on the stock exchange. I mean, so again, it sounds a bit crazy with the first time you hear this stuff. Mm-mm. But I just say, people, go read their work. Go to the world. Go to weforum.org. It's their website. You can read all about it. It says they want the Fourth Industrial Revolution. You go, well, what is the Fourth Industrial Revolution? Well, just read the next paragraph. It says a blending of man with machine, transhumanism. That's what they want.
And, you know, I always hear this phrase a lot, and it always bugs me. It's like, here again, just like you said, it's not that we are great detectives or psychics. And I hear people say, especially women will say it in relationships, you know, when someone tells you who they are, believe them. Right. These people are telling you who they are with these tabletop simulations and their white papers. I mean, they're telling you it's right there. We don't even have to speculate. The evidence is there and they're telling you, and they're actually laughing at you because you don't believe it.
And there's this weird component to it that I guess I understand it I know that it exists, but I don't really understand the depths of it. But there's a cosmic or karmic component to this where they feel the need or maybe even obligation to tell you what they're going to do before they do it to you. I don't know if they believe that cleanses them of any sort of guilt or you know, culpability in this whole thing, but they will tell you what they're going to do before they do it. And we have been trained, conditioned through a variety of, you know, television, education system, all these things, to not recognize it when we're being told what the plan is. Or you know, in some cases, it hides in plain sight due to the sheer magnitude of it all. Like, oh, you think they're going to try and create a one world government? I mean, if they were doing that, surely we would see the signs of it by now. And you're like, look around, they're everywhere. Yeah. Like, yeah. I don't know what to tell you. If you can't see them, then maybe you're not paying attention. So sometimes it's right in front of our face, but this need or this sort of part of the deal is that they need to tell you what they're going to do before they do it. So, you know, look, if I thought that the tabletop exercises were going to make it so that we were better prepared for the next pandemic, I'd be in favor of it. Of course, I'd be firemen trained, you know, to put out fires and things like that. I'm all for practice. But I think that what they're doing in advance of this is a couple of things. First of all, they are telegraphing what they're they're going to do, but they need to kind of get everybody together and explain
their ducks in a row.
They need to lay this out and say, this is where we're going. This is how we're going to do it. These are the people that are going to be in charge. You start to see the same people over and over again, like I mentioned. And that's suspicious to me because they're not always at the same companies either, but they find themselves back in the same simulation. So I think that once people get, you know, acclimated to this and they think, okay, there is a group that's plotting bad things. Once you tune your brain into it, you know, you can see it. You know those paintings that are like all just a bunch of dots and you stand there and squint at it and then you go, I don't see it. Oh, wait, an elephant, you know, and then you see the elephant. Once you see the elephant, you can always see it. And it's like that with this stuff. It'll be right in front of your face for most people. But once you get yourself trained where you know maybe it's keywords, maybe it's the phrase, the terminology that they use, or it's the same people or whatever, you get better at it. The more you practice and you start to hear things in the media and you go, oh, I know what that means. You know, I know what when they say that, it means this. I know it takes practice, but you get better at it.
This Clade X that you're talking about that happened in June 1st, 2018. This was in DC at the Mandarin Oriental Hotel. Weirdly enough, on one of my daughter's birthdays, but it was about a pandemic simulation. Again, how did you hear about this one? And are you hearing about any of them coming up in the near future?
I heard about this one from Whitney Webb. Talking about it. We were talking about Thomas Inglesby and Tara O'Toole and how they are a sort of a thread that runs through a lot of this and how they're involved in, several of these games and exercises. So I'll tell you what, I don't have any information about any simulations that are scheduled, but if somebody knows Tara O'Toole's schedule for the next year and it involves being at some sort of conference for a couple of days, I'd love to know about it because I get a really bad feeling about these things. Because like as an example, at Event 201, just to put this in perspective, at Event 201, the people that participated in that conference that took, I think it took 2 days, when they were done, they were given a little gift basket and a little gift bag, you know, as you do. And inside that, there was a plushy toy. There was a little stuffed animal. The stuffed animal was round with spike proteins all around. It was a stuffed coronavirus doll that was given out the end of October 2019, not 2020, 2019. Right. So everybody that was there got themselves a nice little souvenir, which I'm sure you could find on eBay somewhere.
And I have friends here in the States, and one of them is a medical professional, and he feels pretty sure that he caught COVID in fall of 2019 at a football game in the Southeast. And I'm like, yeah, you know what? That's extremely possible because look, it was only a matter of months, but we finally accepted that it was here. And at that point, you have to know that it was here beforehand. Even if people are coming and going in airplanes, I think it was here in the U.S. maybe early fall.
There were people that had that same experience for sure. Yep. There were also the military games. Military games, kind of like the Olympics for the military, and everybody gets together and you know what better place to get it, you know, like the Olympics. Everybody's going to be mingling, and then they're all going to go back to their home country. And it seems like if you can't do it at the Olympics, you could do it at the military games. If only we knew where they held the military games that year. Oh, it was Wuhan, China.
Pure coincidence, ladies and gentlemen. Pure coincidence. You guys, we're going to take our final break of this hour. I speak with Charlie Robinson. We will be right back.
Here they go again. After permitting the government to propagandize American citizens on American soil by slipping the Smith-Mont Repeal Act, which couldn't make it out of committee on its own merits, into the 2012 National Defense Authorization Act, and then funding such propagandizing by using the 2016 NDAA to stand up the Global Engagement Center, Democrats, including Kentucky Senator Mitch McConnell, these days a de facto Democrat, are going to inject another piece of legislation that couldn't make it out of committee into this year's NDAA. The Journalism Competition and Preservation Act does nothing to promote competition and everything to preserve financially failing corporate media, which serve as the propaganda arm of the Democrat Party. The JCPA is simultaneously a massive wealth transfer from Silicon Valley to the New York Times, Washington Post, and other corporate media outlets, and also creates a mechanism whereby tech can censor more actual news. It's time to stop using the biennial NDAA as a vehicle for enshrining into law Democrat totalitarian initiatives that can't make it through Congress on their own. And it's also time for Republican voters to stop voting for Republicans like Mitch McConnell. From MAGAInstitute.com, this is Timothy Shea for TNT Radio.
Challenging the consensus and debunking the narrative. This is Viewpoint.
In a news release from the 30th of March 2021, the World Health Organization announced that 25 heads of government and international agencies had issued a joint call for high-level political action to protect the world from future health crises. Ominously, world leaders said the international community should work together towards a new international treaty for pandemic preparedness and response, to build a more robust global health architecture that will protect future generations. There will be other pandemics and other major health emergencies. No single government or multilateral agency can address this threat alone, the leaders declared. The question is not if, but when. Together, we must be better prepared to predict, prevent, detect, assess, and effectively respond to pandemics in a highly coordinated fashion. The COVID-19 pandemic has been a stark and painful reminder that nobody is safe until everyone is safe. The Prime Ministers of Italy, United Kingdom, President of France, Chancellor of Germany, President of Ukraine were among the signatories.
Democrat candidate Katie Hobbs,
who ran the Arizona election,
censored her political opponents, disrupted Election Day votes, and threatened counties with prosecution if they didn't declare her the winner. Katie Hobbs is a cheat and a liar. We mandate that the truth be told. Today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Charlie Robinson is my guest. He is the author of The Octopus of Global Control. He's also the co-author of The Controlled Demolition of the American Empire. He's the host of Macro Aggressions. He's the co-host of The Union of the Unwanted. And Charlie, while we were having that break, my brain was rolling, and I just remembered, there was another tabletop exercise, the NTI Munich Security Conference of 2021, and that was the Nuclear Threat Initiative, which essentially predicted a monkeypox outbreak. Do you remember that?
No, I didn't. I haven't heard about this one. Oh no!
Well, I'm looking at it right now. This is my crazy conspiracy brain. Like, I mean, I people sometimes ask, well, they don't anymore because I've lost most of my friends. You know, because it's like, Parker, you're first of all, you voted Republican, so you're Satan. Yeah. But it's like, I've just been interested in this for so long that I forget these things. And yeah, I'm looking at it right now. This is May 24th of 2022, NTI statement and fact regarding NTI Munich Security Conference 2021. Essentially, basically, they predicted a monkeypox type outbreak. And I'm trying to remember what all they said, but it was just another tabletop exercise. And I think, if I remember correctly, now I might be misremembering this, but I believe they even thought that it would outbreak at festivals.
Really? Oh, isn't that funny? What a coincidence. See, the thing that about this, that if you want to understand these exercises, you start at the end and work backwards. So you start with the final recommendations, because the final all this other stuff is nonsense. What they want is they go in with an agenda and they want these certain things. The final recommendations that they suggest after they do this are the things that they wanted from the beginning, that from well before the simulation even started. So as an example for Cladex, the final recommendations were to develop new vaccines in months, not years, and to pioneer a strong, sustainable global health security system, which was code for more virus surveillance. They wanted to be able to watch you for health reasons, of course, but they wanted to increase surveillance on you. And the third component was they wanted to be able to nationalize the health industry if they needed to, the whole medical industry. If something came up, They wanted the ability to do that. So knowing that that's what they want, they then create these scenarios. And they in the Claydex one, you know, it ends with 150 million dead worldwide. Now, if you really believe, or if in actuality 150 million people did die, you would want to have had a great plan. You know, you'd want to prevent that, right? So they have to make it sound terrifying. But the final recommendations, there's also there's a component of the final recommendations that I always pick up on. And it is this. Because again, you have to understand that these guys want world government. When you know that, mm-hmm. then a lot of this yeah. makes more sense. They'll always end with, a problem this large can't be solved by just one country. I mean, it's an international problem, right? So we need an international response. We need a global response. We need one group that can be in charge of the response for, you know, the whole world, like a, I don't know, world government. But the World Health Organization, founded by, you know, the Rockefellers. So these, you know, they always find a way to sort of make the ending, you know, the results, like, well, how do we, this sounds terrible. How do we fix this? Well, we just so happen to have these solutions in our back pocket. Boom, here yeah. you go. And it involves less privacy for you, more money for our favorite groups, less for you, more for us. And it's always that way. But they really need to scare you. Again, they don't want one country to just kind of peel off and go, I have nothing to, I don't want anything to do with this. They want to keep everybody in alignment. So it's got to be a global response, because after all, these problems are so big, they're just international in scope. And so therefore, it has to be an international response. And when you do that, you create this pretext where everyone just goes, well, yeah, that makes sense. You know, I guess, mm-hmm. I guess we do, yeah. Never even thinking that, like, the solution in Southeast Asia might be vastly different than the solution in sub-Saharan Africa. You know what I mean? Like, it's, trying a one-size-fits-all approach to this is insane. But people never really get that far down the thinking. They just go, oh, yeah, that sounds great. You're coming to save us? You're the World Right. Health Group, and you're going to save us? Great. We need saving, and this is a huge problem. And so you guys, so it's classic problem reaction solution. You know, you create the problem, you foment the reaction, we're all going to die. And then the solution is, well, you know, we just happen to have this magic potion that we worked on. Here's the yeah. solution, you know, and you're like, thank God you got me the solution. So, but again, knowledge of this, an understanding of this disarms it. You know, you go, oh, I see this. I know what you guys are doing. This isn't going to work on me. So it's really, you know, people wonder, like, well, why do you talk about this? You know, you're not out there selling some solution to this. Look, the solution to this is awareness, as far as mm-hmm. I'm concerned. The more people yes. are aware of it, the less power it has. They can't scare you when you know it's coming, you know? So when they schedule these events, and clearly they schedule these events, you know, it takes away some of that wow factor from them. So I think that it's important for us not to dwell on this and to get ourselves depressed and, you know, oh, what are we going to do? They're so powerful. We're nothing, you know? No. Just educate yourself about this. So the next time you go, eh, I've seen this one before. This is a COVID? Yeah, it's a rerun. I've seen this one before. I'm not worried.
Let me ask you this, because I could tell we travel the same kind of roads. What else is on your radar right now? What is really interesting to you that you're looking into right now?
Well, I'll tell you, the FTX situation to me is an iceberg. Okay.
Right.
I am, you know, so you mentioned I wrote the book Controlled Demolition of the American Empire with Jeff Berwick. Jeff Berwick is a guy who owns a company called the Dollar Vigilante, also the Crypto Vigilante. He's a guy who knows mm-hmm. a lot about crypto. I know just enough to be dangerous. But same those here. Guys know a lot, you know, and so I've been involved in crypto. I've been watching it and participating in it, you know, to the extent that I can. But when the FTX situation came up, and I started to see who these guys were connected to, I got real bad feelings about it, you know? Yep. And so, you know, much like the Theranos situation, which ironically mm-hmm. was happening, you know, at the same time, at least the trial verdict and everything was coming out at the same time. I'm getting really bad vibes about this, because I feel like, and I think a lot of people feel the same way, for whatever reason, we just don't think that these guys are actually going to go to prison. And that bothers me. And so it's almost like you're too big or too connected. And that's kind of the problem. It's like when you either want to be not connected at all or completely connected, to be insulated. When you're like, as an example, Epstein, you know,
protected. That's what I'm thinking of.
He's with intelligence. Well, I'll tell you what, I get intelligence vibes from this family as well, because it's not just Sam.
Of
his
course.
Parents are Democratic bundlers, but
they're Stanford professors. They're Stanford professors. They're smart enough, and their kid is smart. You don't make these kind of mistakes. The brother has got like his own foundation. No, I think they're totally all intel.
That's the one that makes me. So Sam is clearly taking the spotlight on him. He's got all the money and everything, but don't sleep on his brother, Gabe Bankman-Fried. This is a guy I think needs to get a little bit of attention, because he started his own PAC, his own political action committee, you know, so he's taking money. So the money was going from FTX to Alameda. It was going from Alameda in the form of personal loans to some of these people. And Sam was taking personal loans, a little over $3 billion of the $10 billion came back to him, and in a billion in a regular loan and $2.2 billion in a loan to Paper Bird, a company he controlled. Then that money from him was going into a PAC that he made to give out to mostly Democrats, but his partner gave it out to Republicans, but he was mostly Democrats. And then his PAC gave money to his brother's PAC. And so you go, well, what is his brother's PAC doing? Is he doing all that? Okay, what they were both focusing on were pro-mandate, pro-lockdown candidates. They want people that are going to keep you in your home and inject you. But his brother went even further, because his brother was getting involved in genetics. And as people that start to
Epstein
get
into the,
when you get into genetics, what you find is that genetics in the way that these people talk about it is just another way of describing eugenics. It's a more sanitized version. So you start to wind up, you know, he's doing this Gabe Bankman-Fried is involved in genes, gene editing, gene manipulation and everything. And I go, well, I did a show about Wellcome Trust in the UK. And what is Wellcome Trust involved in? They're the Genome Project. They're involved in this. But their original names were the British Eugenic Society. So this is a depopulation outfit. So when you hear genetics or gene therapy, genome projects and all of that, you know, don't think, oh, ancestry.com, I'm going to find out if I'm 1/45th Scandinavian or something, you know. No,
Charlie, I ain't even doing that. I won't even do that. Nobody's getting my blood to find out, you know. Well, when I go to the hospital or the doctor, I don't feel like I have a choice, but I am certainly not giving it to Ancestry or anybody else voluntarily.
No. And so when you do that and you realize, oh, that whole industry is really sketchy and it has ties to the British Eugenics Society, and anybody that's working on genome projects, I'm going to keep my eyes on. And then I see his brother and I go, where's he giving his money to? And I go, oh, genome projects, genetics, wait a second. And then I go, hang on a sec. Epstein was doing this too. Epstein had these same guys in New Mexico, where he was working on genetics and he was having scientists come over. And I go, 100%. Okay, hang on a second. There's some over. If this were a Venn diagram of criminality, there would be some overlapping here going on. So I think that, you know, look, we're so early into the FTX thing that we don't even know what we don't know right now. But I envision a year from now, we're going to have a much different view on this, where we're going to see that this is one of the more important stories to come across in the last couple of years, and that it has ties to not just, not just American politicians, but all sorts of people all over the place. And a lot of people took money from this guy. And obviously we've talked about the Ukraine money laundering machine that's going on there. And that's devious too, but he's the reason why I bring this up is because he's at a point now where he seems like he's such an important cog that he's gone from prosecuting, let's prosecute this guy, to let's protect this guy, because he knows, yes, if he knows where the body's buried, he's valuable. So I would keep an eye on him. If nothing ever happens to him, but everything gets pinned on Caroline Ellison, his partner slash girlfriend, yeah, then we know that we're onto something.
Well, yeah. And ultimately, if he does get apprehended, I think it's an Epstein situation, because you're right. He knows too many people. The fact that he's not apprehended already says a lot. Charlie Robinson, tell everybody how to find you on social media, websites, the whole nine yards.
Macroaggressions in audio format, wherever podcasts are served, in video format on band.video, Rockfin, Odyssey, vigilante.tv. You can follow me on Twitter at macroaggression, and the website is theoctopusofglobalcontrol.com.
Charlie Robinson, this is why I do this job. These are the conversations a nerd like me loves to have. Thank you, brother.
Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate you.
All right. I appreciate you too. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for listening, because I appreciate you. You are why we do this. And thank you to TNT. Thank you to my producers, Dave and Alex. Thank you to John and Darren, all of you. I'll catch you manana.